Blog Talk Radio.
Host Merle Exit. It's a nice sunny day here in New York City. I think it's like 50-60s or something like that. Yes, a day definitely to go out and play, but it's okay. I don't mind taking the time and hanging where I am to do this radio show. And this one's a good one. Oh, they're all good, but we're going back to Talbot County in Maryland again. Well, we're continuing some talk on Talbot County. Over in the town of Oxford, there's just a bookstore called Mystery Loves Company. And the owner, Kathy Harrig, she might reveal some mysteries of the area, as well as speaking about the bookstore and this special women's mystery writing group. Then, the other night I went to see Jim Caruso at the Birdland Jazz Club, and I'll talk about that and tell you who was there. And then later on we're going to have Latitude 38 Bistro in Oxford that's who uses local products. Wendy Palmer will be on the air to talk with us about that. But as you know, before I introduce, it's sponsor time. Oh, I shouldn't. Okay, I'll do this one first. Why not?
ACL, anterior cruciate ligament. The tear will bring tears, and while the rest of your team may be taking a knee, you'll be grasping yours. Anterior cruciate ligament will feel more like anterior excruciating ligament. You hear that loud pop and feel the pain. Your knee swells as you are assisted off the field and an ice pack is applied. For some, the pain and swelling will subside and may simply become a minor nuisance. For others, a significant disability. Able Orthopedic and Sports Medicine can bring you back in the game, specializing in arthroscopic ACL knee reconstruction surgery. It's a minimally invasive procedure that rarely requires hospitalization. With healing, recovery, and appropriate therapy and rehabilitation, you could be returning next season. Let Able Orthopedic return the able and disable. Able Orthopedic and Sports Medicine is located at 76-55 Austin Street in Forest Hills, New York. Call them at 718-897-2228 or visit them at their website at www.ableorthopedic.com. Able Orthopedic asks, how's your ACL?
Yeah, well, my ACL is fine. My back isn't so good. My hip ain't doing so great, but that's okay. Maybe I'll go visit them. Okay, let's talk some good stuff. A little mystery as I introduce. Hello, Kathy. How are you?
Hi. I'm good.
So, all right. Tell us, there's a little history with that store, isn't there?
Yes. It was originally built as a bank in 1900, and it has a beautiful vault door and a lovely vault. And then it went through a lot of changes. In 1930, it closed as a bank and became the town's post office. And after that, about 20 years, it became an actual residence. So there are two full bathrooms, and it's a beautiful hardwood floor and like lots of French doors and windows. And then after that, it became another commercial entity, and finally we bought it in 2005. And it's right on the Tread Avon River.
And by the way, I guess the one thing that was kept was the vault?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's got a beautiful vault. That's where we keep our signed first editions, actually.
Ah, I was wondering about that, if you really kept anything special in that.
Yes, we do.
Oh, okay. Well, let's, one of the things I want to first get into is, well, let's talk about what, are there just mystery books in the store?
No, we started out in a mystery bookstore environment in Baltimore. We were in business in Baltimore for 20 years. And we moved over onto the Eastern Shore, which is about 90 miles away. And we realized there was no other bookstore in the area, and so we had to be a general bookstore as well. So we acquired books on the Eastern Shore, flora and fauna, as we say, books to educate and make you smile. So we have things about children's, adult, fiction, nonfiction. A lot of it, though, we really stress local authors. So we have an awful lot of local authors that either live here in Oxford or in the surrounding area, and there's a huge Eastern Shore Writers Association, and they have a rather large 250-person convention every year, and they teach people the ins and outs of writing and publishing and getting your work on the market.
So, but what percentage then is the, would you say there were mystery books in terms of somebody coming in there?
Oh, about 40, 60, something like that.
Oh, okay.
But we still do an awful lot of mailed order and special order in the mystery field, and we're known for our expertise, so people come to us specifically for that. We're what's called a destination bookstore.
Well, how did you get into this? Is it mystery writing that you like, or writing?
Both. I was a librarian for 30 years in Baltimore, and a friend of mine was closing her store in Baltimore and wanted to know if I'd purchase it. And it was actually called The Butler Did It, which I thought was a cute name too. But we decided to move it down to Fells Point. It was up on North Avenue, and we decided to move it down to Fells Point, which is also on the water, and have a more sort of touristy type feel for it. Gorgeous building, tin ceiling like ours here in Oxford. And we were in business for 20 years, and then we moved over here on the Eastern Shore, and we decided, well, we'll open this one too. And for several years, we had two stores, and then it got to be a little bit too much going back and forth over the Bay Bridge, so we closed the one in Baltimore, and now we just have one.
Ah. Is mystery your thing?
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's
right. Oh, yes. I was a Sherlockian. My father was a Sherlockian. Those are the first books I read as a child, and so I just kept enjoying them and still do.
Just like, I know you can't really give a number, but like, how many mystery books do you think you've read in your lifetime?
Thousands? Thousands. I tell people I read about one a day, so.
Wow.
And so,
really?
and so do my mother and father, so I got it from them.
You could read,
and
like,
of course,
about
I was a librarian. I was a librarian, too, so.
Oh, so you got, I mean, did you take speed writing or anything? Or just,
speed reading, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Speed reading, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
sure.
That makes it easier, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. And what about, so you got a lot of people coming in specifically for mystery books? I mean, do they
Well, mystery is a pretty general category, because there are all kinds of children's mysteries, and there's also thrillers and romantic suspense and historical mysteries. And practically every book on the bestseller list, at least in the last couple of years, has been mystery-related in some way. So it's pretty general when you think about it. But, you know, some people don't read mysteries, and so we have just general fiction, and we have a lot of nonfiction and local biographies and history. So
you get a lot of local authors. As a matter of fact, wait a minute,
yes.
Who was I speaking with from the Creamery? Wait, Susan
mm-hmm.
Marmo?
Susan Marmo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is her books there?
Yes, they are.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
A lot of books nowadays are privately published, and that makes it a little bit difficult for us, because we usually deal with the major publishers. But, you know, we try specifically for local authors. We try to get their books in quantity so that they can do author signings and launch their books here. And we've launched many, many authors, and off to success.
Oh, that's really cool. Now, wait, someone wants to say hello, wait. That was Eunice.
Ah, hello,
rubber
Eunice.
Chicken. Okay. Wait, I'm sorry. Esther, go ahead. Okay, she feels left out if she doesn't say hello either. Okay, let's get back to this. So I understand that, is there any kind of like some local mystery?
Oh, sure, yeah. In fact, we're having a mystery writer who is local and has written a local mystery this weekend. Her name is Margaret Meacham, and she's written books for children and young adults for many years. And she finally, because she's from this area, she finally wanted to do an adult mystery. And it's called The Survival of Sarah Landing. And it's an artist who lives in a cottage off of Peach Blossom Creek, which you came over, I'm sure, when you visited us, which is nearby, and it's a beautiful creek surrounded by very nice homes. And she lives in this cottage, and she gets involved in a mystery, and it's set here and in Easton and also in Washington, D.C. And she's involved with a particular painter that turns up missing, and then there's some question about who actually did a painting, and she has to go down to Washington to a gallery to discover who the actual painter of the painting was in order to solve the mystery. And it's a lovely book, and she's also written a second book for young adults, which is called The Ghost of Lauraford, and that's a fascinating one. It's set in New York. Actually, it's near where my grandmother was born, so I'm very interested in the area. It's based on a town called Lilydale in New York, and Lilydale is a town full of spiritualists, people that do seances and talk to the dead. And it's a ghost story, but it's about a little girl who goes with her father to this town, which he calls Lauraford, and decides that he is going to get rid of all of these shams and fraudulent people and run them out of town. And he takes this little girl with him. And his little girl has a totally different experience in this town than he does. And it's a very interesting book.
Now, I'm just curious, have there any, like, I don't know whether, like, a lot of places I go to, they do like ghost tours and things like that.
A friend of mine, whose name is Mindy Burgoyne, is the expert on Eastern Shore ghosts, and she takes at least two or three ghost tours a week. She just finished one in Crisfield last week, and it was extremely popular, and she has to do another one. She does one about once a week, but she's an extremely busy person. She's also an internet maven, and she deals in social networking, and she actually takes some wonderful tours to Ireland as well. She calls them her Thin Places Tour, and Thin Places means where you are very close to the spirits of the dead. And she takes these tours all over the eastern United States and, as I said, to Ireland.
Are there any, like, tours that are in Talbot County?
Yes, that's what she does.
Oh,
that's what she specializes in.
Oh, in Talbot County.
Mm-hmm.
Now, suppose I was in, if I, you know, what did I miss? Where should I have stopped in? What places should
what
I have
places?
Stopped in?
Well, yeah. one of the interesting places, I don't know how long you have to take, but there's a wonderful tale of a woman who was buried in a cemetery which is off of Route 50 south of Easton. And she was buried there, unfortunately, when she wasn't dead. And she was put in her coffin, and she had the people noticed she had an extremely beautiful ring on her hand. And right after she was buried, the grave diggers decided they were going to go after this ring, and they went and opened the coffin and took off her ring, and they were about ready to slice her fingers off, and she sat up and ran down, got out of her coffin, out of the grave, and ran after them. And she actually outlived her husband by about 20 years, and he was a minister, and she appeared on her dressed in her shroud in front of his doorstep by the parish hall, and told him that she was not dead. And that took place about 15, 20 miles from here. On Route 50.
Oh, wow. Is that before they had wakes?
Yes. Well, I don't know. I guess so.
As a matter of fact, it's interesting because I was always wondering. I'm Jewish, so I didn't, you know, I didn't know much about like where this whole thing with the wake started. But when I heard what it was really about, where the, you know, where it came from, that it wasn't necessarily anything that had to do with a religious thing at all.
No,
like,
the 1800s were very suspicious about being, well, they were very afraid about being buried alive. In fact, Edgar Allan Poe has quite a few stories about that. And, of course, he's a Baltimore author, and so he's a Maryland author, mystery author as well.
Ah, okay. So now I also understand you're a member of a particular women's writers group.
Right. I'm a member of two. One of them is just for women, and it's called Sisters in Crime. The other one I'm a member of is Mystery Writers of America. But Sisters in Crime was founded in 1989 by Sarah Paretsky, who is a very famous mystery author from Chicago, and she and several other women decided, who were authors, decided that at that time, and even coming into today, there were very few reviews for women's mysteries. They were writing them. There were quite a lot of women mystery writers, but they never got reviewed, and they never got the salaries of other writers. They never got their place in the awards ceremonies. They were totally being passed over by men. And so she started this organization, and it began as a basic organization for writers. And then what happened was people who joined in this support, and it was hundreds of thousands of people, men and women, decided that what they needed to do was form individual groups. So there's chapters, and I was the vice president of our Washington, D.C. chapter when it was founded in 1992. And they meet, and they have wonderful meetings. They invite people like, we go to the morgue, we go to the firing range, we have people that come in and tell us about poisons. We have, and then we discuss individual books, we have book groups, we have, and then we support women mysteries. And one of the most important things they did, and from a journalist you'd understand this, is that they have a watch group that reviews all of the newspapers every day and the magazines and the online review sources. And they keep records of, are we doing anything to improve the lot of women mysteries writers? And are they getting reviewed more? And by doing this, they increase the number of reviews, they increase the salaries of women who are getting contracts in mystery writing, and they also have a great supportive structure for people who want to write a mystery, so that not only do you get to attend if you're a writer, but you get to attend if you want to be a writer. And it helps you find out how to market your book, how to get like a contract, how to get an agent, how to find out what are some great friends who can support you, like how do you find out if you need a particular expertise in your writing that, for your research. And you meet an awful lot of wonderful people who love mysteries. And there are groups all over the United States. There are groups in Australia, New Zealand, England, Germany, France. I always say that if you know foreign languages, there's tons of mystery writers out there that need to be translated. And as you probably know, one of the biggest things right now are mysteries set in Scandinavia. And there are maybe another 100 or 50 authors that have never been translated into the United States and into American books or into English at all.
Oh. So now, if I wanted to get in touch, let's say, you know, well, not let's say, I would like to, like, do something like to help promote by, I guess, reviewing the books. How do I go about doing that?
Well, you can just review books as you want to. That would be no problem. But if you want to get in touch with Sisters in Crime, it's just sistersincrime.org. And it really is a wonderful organization. As I said, there's a New Jersey chapter, New York chapter. We have a Mid-Atlantic chapter, and then there's one in Southern Virginia, and all the way up and down the East Coast and out West. And you can just look on their website.
Oh, okay. Then I guess I could, like, you know, tell them I'm open for reviewing books and send me, you know, copy.
The other thing they do is that this is something I started a long time ago in 1992, was I became the library liaison. And at that point, there was no real contact between authors and libraries. If you wanted to have an event at a library, you had to go personally there yourself. There was no speakers bureau. There was no way for libraries to contact an author. Let's say a library wanted to do a Friends of the Library group meeting. There was no way of them to get in touch with really famous authors, and unless they knew them personally. And so that's another thing that Sisters in Crime does. It's very, very helpful. And we also sponsor two major events every year. They go to the American Booksellers Association to liaise with publishers in New York City, and they also go to the American Library Association, which is also something I started. And that allows them to have contact with librarians, let them know that they are out there and that can help them with events and let them know what new books are coming out. There's also a Sisters in Crime Books in Print that's available online that you can just look up and find out in order which books by an author are in print that you can add. And the most important thing is it's very easy for a librarian to use because it's set up by the ISBN number, which is the number that's specific to that book. And then you can find out if it's in paperback or hardback and make contact with that particular author to perhaps come to your town and do an event.
Well, hopefully, what I could at least do, if I can't actually review the books, I could have these authors on the radio show to talk about.
Oh, of course you could. Yes, you could.
That's one of the things.
And there's a really neat way to do it because it's all done regionally, so that, you know, you don't. I mean, if you want to get in touch with somebody from the West Coast, you can do that too. But, you know, otherwise, it's done from regional setups so that you can see who's in your region that may be willing to be interviewed or want to be promoted or, you know, want to appear at your event.
Well,
and lots of times they do it for fundraising for the library, and most authors are very happy if they're able to do that kind of event.
Well, the one thing that's great about my radio show is that it doesn't matter where they're calling in from.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I'm in New York, it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah. That's another thing that we've been able to do, too, is link people up to do book club exchanges. In other words, you have a book club in Iowa, and you want to interview somebody in, you know, Montana. You can either set up a Skype connection or just phone in. And we've done both at our book clubs and just put it on speakerphone so everybody can contribute. That's a lot of fun, too, because then you're having immediate contact with the author after you've read the book in the book club.
Yeah, because I would like to specifically, like, mysteries that surround something that are kind of real, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, you know, like, I think I'll just sit down and make up a character and a place and a time and that type of thing.
Yes, and I think the thing is, even if it's written from an escapist point of view, you would be surprised how much research is involved. It still has to be a mystery. Still has to, even though they made up a town, a mystery has to be extremely authentic. And if it's not authentic, I don't think people are going to continue reading it. It has to be real to them, whether it's a real place that they know about or whether it sounds like something that could actually happen.
Now, when you're meeting mystery writers, are we looking at Murder, She Wrote? Do we find her? Do we find
Jessica Fletcher? Actually, I do. I'll be seeing him next week. His the person that wrote Jessica Fletcher's books is a man by the name of Donald Bain, and he writes them with his wife, and he is actually writing also the Margaret Truman books. Although she has died, he has continued on the series. And this is a situation where they are given the rights and permissions by the estate of an author, and then they have to continue on with that author's character that the author has created. Of course, Margaret Truman wrote about Washington, D.C., and, of course, the Murder, She Wrote books were kind of set in Maine, but she goes to Ireland and a couple other places, too. But they were actually written by a man by the name of Donald Bain, who is actually a author in his own right.
Oh, I should get in touch with him. He would be an interesting person to have on the show.
He's sort of like a ghostwriter, and that's a very interesting job in its own right.
When it comes to when you're getting books, the mystery books to read, are you reading to specifically enjoy the book, or specifically to see whether it fits in the place or that kind of a thing?
Oh, no. I'm there for enjoyment. I've always been there for enjoyment. But I also read it to find out what's good to recommend to people, because that's my real job, is to recommend books to people. It's what's called hand selling in the book business. It's what we do that you really can't do over the internet. And, for instance, I will set aside a stack of books for an individual that comes into my store every day, because I know she would like this stack of books. And it's a bunch of books that have just come out, and she has probably not another way to discover those stacks of books. And I will order them specifically and get them in for her and give her a call or him and give them a call and tell them, you know, we've got some books that you might like.
Oh, so when you're reading them, you're also thinking about...
I'm thinking about the people that might be enjoying them, yes.
So you do have a number of regulars that...
Oh, yes, that's what keeps me busy.
Oh, really? It's not just somebody saying, let's see what's over here. Oh, look, there's this...
Yes. Although we're a tourist town, and we were a tourist town in Baltimore, too, we would not be in business if we didn't have the regulars. Those were the people that were there through thick and thin. They're there every year. I have a customer out in Mountain Home, Idaho, and I have had her as a customer for 21 years. And she buys from me every month. So, and a lot of it's from my recommendation. I do a monthly newsletter, and the newsletter comes out by email, and it's also I have about 250 people. I send it out by regular mail because they don't like computers. And
so, in other words, they're not interested in e-books.
No. those 250 aren't. No, that's correct.
Yeah. You know what I want? I forgot to ask you because I was writing about stuff. I think it's tomorrow's Queen's Times. I don't remember what they wrote. No, I got St. Michael's. Okay, Oxford's next. The thing with the fence,
I'll tell you about it quickly. And also I'll tell you about what's happening this weekend. I'm sure
Others
will tell you as well. But we are doing this author signing with Maggie Meacham for Survival Sarah Landing, but it's part of a larger, almost too large, Oxford weekend, which is called Oxford Day. And it is it begins in the morning with breakfast at the firehouse, then it goes on for a 5K run, a 10K run, a dog walk, a parade, and then our book signing. And there's about 25 other events around town. And it's a very, very big day, and it's all in one day. I mean, everything takes place all in one day. You get in at 8 o'clock, you don't leave till 10. It's just a great big long day. And it's a day of homecoming for a lot of people who live outside of Oxford. And, of course, everybody's dressed up and decorated in their stoops and their front porches, and the flowers are out. And it's a beautiful day.
Well, we're hoping, right? But
the
weather keeps changing.
But the beginning of the Oxford Fence activity is this weekend as well. And this was started about 4 years ago by our Oxford Business Association, and we needed some way to promote the businesses around town and get people to walk around. Oxford is a long one road, but a lot of the businesses are tucked away. Some of our major restaurants, in fact, are tucked away, and you wouldn't necessarily see them. So we came up with the idea. This was a time when, like, Baltimore and other people were coming up with these fiberglass things that were like crabs and ducks and things and cows that promoted the town. Well, we decided to do a fence, and the Oxford fence is a specific fence that was developed in Oxford around 1850. It's about 150 years old, and it is got a little bulbous top of it with a little tiny hole in the middle. It looks sort of like a minaret almost, and it is specifically used as fencing around with white picket fences around all the or most of the houses in Oxford. And so we decided this is a very specific thing. And so we put together five fence posts and put them together as a single unit and nailed them together. And they're made out of cedar. And they're not painted in any way. And we give them out to our local artists at the beginning of the season, about in March, and have them paint whatever they want to paint on that fence. And sometimes a friend of mine has actually used a wood-burning implement to actually make portraits on each one of them. We've had people cut into them to make them have holes or three-dimensional things put on them. And lots of times they're white, but and then they get very, very elaborate. And we have a website that's called portofoxford.com, and you can see some of the examples of fences. And I also want to quickly mention my website, which is mysterygovscompany.com, where you can read our monthly newsletter and see what's coming out and see our event listings.
That's great. I'll have to check the, you said Port of Oxford.
Oxford.com.
Okay, I'll check that
out. And it
out.
Has pictures of Oxford Day, and it has pictures of, there's a video on it, and there's also pictures of the fences that are from previous years and the current, some of the current ones. And
okay,
the fences will
to,
be up. The fences
yeah.
will be up until October, where we're going to have an auction. We do this every year, and we auction it off. The fences off for charity, and some of them go for as high as $1,000 a piece. So then people put them in their yard, the front porch, and in their backyard.
That's cool.
It is very cool.
I'll make sure that I get that into next week's article, which will be on Oxford. That's good. I'm glad to hear
yes.
that. I guess that was something I missed. Well, I heard a little bit about it. We got into a little bit about it, but I didn't realize that they were having.
There's also a map. There's also a map, which will be on the website, too, when they're done, that has so people can walk around and do a tour, and that's what they do. They come with their families and go through and to see all 18 of them all around town. And it did our – so it's a walking tour, plus it's an art project, plus it gets people to go to the different businesses. So we think we're kind of clever.
It sounds kind of clever to me. I guess the mystery in that is finding each of the places.
Yes, exactly. And they have little posts at them, and the kids. It's a wonderful family thing because the kids like it, and the because it's like a discovery thing, and then the parents get some walking done, and you know they can discover the town.
Great, that's fabulous. Okay, well I'll get in touch with some of the people you mentioned and sites and. And see what I could do at this point from there. That should be a lot of fun. And well, I guess it's too bad I wasn't there this coming weekend.
Yes, it's a brilliant weekend. You'll have to mark it on your calendar for next year.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for talking with us and sharing. Let's see. Let's get some follow-ups. And if you happen to, like, you know anybody who you would want to, you know, allow to have an interview, that
sure.
you think that get in touch with that person and, you know, email to me and, you know, and we'll take it from there, too.
Okay. Well, we thank you for interviewing us. And
okay.
hope you stop in Oxford.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think I'll be going to Dorchester County. So I think
that's very interesting too. Right. Totally different feeling to it.
That's kind of what I get.
It's a waterman's town. It's a much more it's a different, more wild place than this. So Oxford's a very sedate little town.
Which is okay.
You know. It's extremely beautiful. I'm looking out on the water right now with a sailboat going by, and it's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Yes. Okay. Well, again, thank you again.
You're welcome.
And have an absolutely wonderful day.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye. Bye. Oh, yeah, I guess I'll have to go back there to Oxford, huh? All right. Well, I guess let's see. It's commercial time. Yeah. You know what I have to do. I know. The trouble is, okay, I'll tell you this. But,
what would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
Yes, and you can get these wonderfully tasting brownies at www.brownies.com. Oh, I have to give them a call before the summer hits and have them send me brownies. Well, okay, so what I want to get into now. So the other night, I went to this place called Birdland Jazz Club in Manhattan. And this entertainer named Jim Caruso, he's the host. And what they do is, like, they have a regular show that could be jazz, you know, a jazz show. Or, for instance, this particular evening, it was Jim Brickman and Victoria Shore. Now, you just have to hear Jim Brickman play the piano once, kind of thing, and you could pick up and go, you know, you hear music and piano music, and you go, that's Jim Brickman playing. It's, you know, that kind of thing. But Jim has also written songs that other people sing, so that's one of the things. And Victoria Shore. Shaw is also a writer and singer as well, and she's written songs for other people. But in this particular thing, she sang some of her things. Jim did his, and that's. So what I want to do is just in case you're going, the name sounds familiar, kind of thing. I have to play. I have some Jim Brickman songs that I want to play. One of the first, I believe, was his first CD, and it was called By Heart. And this is I'm trying to remember. Well, it doesn't matter who's saying. But anyway, so this is. Oh, by the way, Jim Brickman. It's all romance. Romance. That's it. Is.
Hold me close, baby, please. Tell me anything, but that you're gonna leave as I. Cry.
Well, as it turns out, the person who's singing it is a singer named Laura Creamer, who I'm not familiar with. But By Heart is actually, that was the title album of his first CD. Then we have another one, another album, I think, I believe it was Picture This. I'm sure you're going to have, that you'll all recognize, because this was a song over and over and over that I listened to. Valentine. I know I have some Jim Brickman CDs. I had gone to my CDs yesterday so I can put some up, and I realized I think I have every single one that he's put out. Maybe there might be a couple, because I think some of the Christmas CDs I didn't get. And even when he does, it's interesting. He'll do Christmas songs, but this nice Jewish boy, he does Christmas songs, but the Christmas songs that he's writing are they're holiday versus religious kind of thing, and that's, he loves to do them because they're so spirited kind of thing. That's him and romance and glee and all that. He's so sweet. So anyway, The next one that I had gotten into, which people kind of assume it was played, put in a Christmas album, but it wasn't necessarily meant to be a Christmas. Well, it could be a Christmas song. But anyway, but this was a song I could hear like over and over. It was from his album Visions of Love, and it's called The Gift.
Love is patient, love is kind.
By the way, that's not Jim singing. What did I have? I've had their soup. They make good soups. I don't think anything, I haven't gone there enough. Food is tasty, but the shows are worth it. So I guess if you go to the website of birdlandjazzclub.com, you could take a look at the upcoming events, see who's going to be there. And if you just, want to pop in on the Monday night thing, that's cool too. So, okay, so while I'm waiting here, I'll tell you what. Let's play one so that you could hear Jim actually singing here. Okay. It's this one. It's called Gotta Be This or That. Okay.
If you ain't wrong, you're right. If it ain't day, it's night. If you ain't sure, you might. Gotta be this or that. If it ain't full, it's blank. If you don't spend, you bank. If it ain't big, it's frank. Gotta be this or that. Who can it be if it ain't me? I know it's not your mother. Can't you see it's gotta be one way or the other? Tell me what I must know. If you don't like, I'll go. If it ain't yes, it's no. Gotta be this or that. Either you're cool or square. If you're not here, you're there. You just can't be nowhere. It's gotta be this or that. If it ain't twist, it's hop. If it ain't go, it's stop. Either you flip, or you flop. So it's gotta be this or that. We know your talent's known throughout the land.
Well, at Birdland, they all hover.
Oh. My friend, that's sweet. Save me a seat. Well, I'll even spot you the cover.
Thank you.
If you ain't thin, you're fat. Either you sing or scat. If it ain't hit, it's gonna be that. Gotta be this or that.
Take it.
Jelly.
Why, thank you.
And when I croon, don't you swoon.
I only swoon for Minnelli.
If it ain't me, it's you.
If it ain't one, it's two.
If it don't swing, we're through. It's gotta be this.
You can say that again.
It's gotta be that. It's gotta be this.
Gotta be this or that. Okay, so that was Jim Caruso. I guess now we're going to go to Latitude 38 Bistro. And hello, Wendy.
Hi, Merle. How are you doing?
Okay. Well, let me make sure. You're in Oxford, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
You're on the
I just want to make sure. I just So I hear something's coming up this weekend. Is it a big Oxford Festival?
Oxford Day is Saturday. It looks like it's going to be a beautiful day. We're so lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, big family day and usually a huge turnout. We started off with a 5K and a 10K in the morning and then a parade and all kinds of fun things for families.
So in terms of the restaurant, how does the restaurant do anything? It would be nice if we first introduced you, huh?
Well, thank you. Yeah.
Let's start with that. As people listening are going, who the hell are we talking to?
Who is this person? Well, we own two restaurants in Oxford, Latitude 38, which you did visit on your visit to Oxford, and the Masthead at Pier Street Marina. And both restaurants will be open for Oxford Day. And we'll be serving up our famous crab cakes, actually, from a tent down on the main road into town, because there's so many people out and about.
Are they closing the street?
Do briefly for the parade. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And everybody's used to that. So they get into town, they get their parking early, and then it's just briefly closed so that the bands can get through and all the floats and, you know, different parade festivities. And then it's open again, and there's shuttles around town. There's usually a couple of golf carts if you can't walk the whole length of the town. But, you know, it's just a great day.
Now, so are people like, is this like you'll find things in front of people's stores and stuff like
that?
Or
yes, they have, you know, they have vendors in the park and they have vendors at each location around town and each business is open and featuring something special. So, for instance, we're selling our crab cakes and our Maryland crab soup. Highland Creamery will have his homemade ice cream and he'll be down on the Causeway at the Causeway Park and, you know, each restaurant, each business will have something they'll be featuring for sure.
I'm curious, do they don't come in from other, like from St. Michael's or Easton?
Oh, yeah, definitely. People come from all
over. No, I don't mean the people that bringing their local things.
Oh, well, we try to have the vendors be all Oxford businesses, you know, with maybe nonprofits obviously being the exception to the rule. So we'll have different nonprofits in the vendors.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like they don't have Rise Up Coffee.
No, because they're not an Oxford business. I don't think
okay.
they would be.
Okay, that's what I'm saying.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So I understand that. So the crabs are now in season? Are they now in season?
April 1st is opening crab season. And the waters have been a little too chilly for them to be into full swing, but we're anticipating that, you know, the volume will pick up with the warmer temperatures that we're finally seeing. It's just been delayed this year. By now, you know, we're usually in the 70s on a regular basis, and it's just not happening. So we are able to get local crabs, but they just don't, you know, they're not catching what they're normally catching this time of year. So.
Well, let me ask you about, I mean, is it that when you say, is it the water is too cold to catch them versus, are they grown? I mean, are they ready?
The crabs burrow down, you see. They burrow down, and they won't start moving around until the water temperatures are warm enough for them to be moving about, and that's how the crabbers are actually able to catch them. So when the temperatures are too cold, they're burrowed down and no activity. So now they're seeing some activity, but it's just, you know, the volume isn't there yet. But it's coming. Today it's 72 and sunny here in Oxford.
Yeah.
So,
getting warm up here, too. So in other words, is the catching crabs kind of like the same thing as, I have friends that are in, around Boston area, and they, like, on the beach, and they go just clamming.
Sure.
You know, they just go and they dig the clams right out of the mud and, you know,
and take them out and
right.
chuck
well,
them and eat
I
them
mean,
kind of thing. I mean, it's not that easy. I mean, you're not going to find
no.
crabs like
no,
if you were
no.
walking on the beach.
People have definitely set or put out crab pots at the end of their docks and can catch them with, you know, the chicken necking and that kind of thing where they just bait the trap and, you know, you can do your own crabbing right off the end of your dock. However, the true crabbers that go out and do this for a living, you know, they have a whole different way about it. It's not quite that simple. They do what they call trot lines, and they'll do they'll have their own baskets, crab traps here and there, and they'll go and, you know, 20 at a time, go pick them up and see what they've got. So it's, you know, a little bit bigger for a business, obviously.
Are they, like, different? I've gone, like, on a boat where they got lobster traps, and they pick them up, and
right.
you got crabs hanging them in there, too.
Oh, I'm sure they turn up different things.
Yeah. But so when they do the crab traps, are they designed differently so that, you know, you're getting crabs and not lobsters?
Well, we're not going to see any lobsters in our waters anyway, but the
yeah.
I'm sure that each trap is built, designed a little bit differently. I'm not, you know,
okay.
an expert by any stretch on that. I
and
know
you don't
how to
care,
cook
as
them,
long as you
and
get
I
them.
Know how to eat them.
Yes, as long as you get them, and are you getting them, like, when they arrive to you, are they
right. they
already
are alive and kicking? They're the blue, you know, it's a blue crab, and they're alive and kicking when we get them. We keep them in a cooler, which kind of, I guess, stuns them a little bit so that they won't be moving around in the bushel basket in the cooler. And then we steam them to order so they're nice and fresh for our guests, and you know, steam them with a little of the Old Bay seasonings, and serve them right hot to the table. So then that's when they get that bright red, and they just are, you know, so vibrant and dynamite to eat. So, but we get them in fresh, and you can't cook a crab if it's already dead. So when they're brought to us, we have to sort through them and
right.
And make sure that they're really alive and kicking. And some of them will be a little stunned just from the travel, because they'll come in refrigerated trucks, obviously. So our guys that are sorting them for size, obviously, we have to make sure that we have mediums and then large and then jumbo, so they're sorted to size. And each time they're sized, they're checking to see if they're good and live, ready to be served. Yeah, so it's, you know, it's a little bit of work involved, but it's worth the measures to take to make sure the customer's getting what they want and what they paid for.
Well, what about with the crab cakes? Are you now taking the crabs and picking them apart and taking out the meat?
No. There are picking
okay.
houses that do all that work for us. We'll pay to have, you know, that crab meat packaged nicely in the one-pound container. So, you know, the crabs that we buy by the bushel are simply to sell, you know, to the table for people to sit down and do the traditional Eastern Shore, you know, crab picking. But for our crab cakes and our crab imperial and everything else that we have on the menu, we buy the crab meat from, you know, a picking house. So it's fresh meat again. However, somebody else is doing all that dirty work for us. It's a lot of work.
Is there, like, a lot of picking houses in the area?
Yes, we have several in the area, and, of course, there are many seafood vendors that we can get, you know, large quantities of fresh Maryland crab meat. So, we obviously try to get the best price that we can get and the best meat. So we deal with different vendors in the area, but, you know, there's a picking house right down the road from us, 10 miles down the road in Cambridge. So there's, you know, several that can provide local restaurants. And, you know, we're fortunate to have lots of resources to draw from.
So that when you're choosing the houses, you're getting picky.
Oh, you have to be. You have to be. You want to serve good quality seafood. Yeah.
That was supposed to be a pun, but that's okay. Okay. Now let's go to what's the deal with oysters right now at this point? That's past, right?
Well, yeah. Months.
Oyster season's over.
Yeah,
okay.
That's the months with R in them. You can get nice fresh local oysters, but we're moving on to our crab season. But we have oysters on, and both restaurants will have oysters on the menu as long as we can get the good local oysters. The masthead will serve mostly like an oyster chowder or an oyster stew. And then Latitude 38, we serve the baked oysters and fried oysters on salads and that sort of thing. So it's great to be able to use local resources, obviously. And when people come to the Eastern Shore, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for that, Maryland seafood.
Sure.
and tradition, obviously.
So in other words, the oyster season may end by you, but not are they getting, like, in other words, you get oysters that are farmed.
Get farm raised oysters. You can get them from different areas too. It's basically our decision. Trying to stay within our season. For instance, rockfish season starts in April, and our local rockfish we'd like to serve, so we won't serve it out of season, even if you can get it from other areas. Things like that we really try to stick to the to the season.
Well, rockfish, that's sea bass, isn't it?
It's a straight
bass. Another term?
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. So what about in terms of the other local products, do you tend to also like the produce? So is there farms that we can...
Sure. Well, sticking with seafood for a minute, our soft shell clams, they'll catch locally, and they're, truly an Eastern Shore delicacy. People look at it from other areas and go, oh, you're really going to eat that? Because they're just revolting.
They're ugly.
In their appearance. They're so, they're horrible to look at, but the flavor is so great, and like I said, it's a tradition, and people come from other areas and look at you eating them, and they think, oh, why would you want to do that? But until you've given it a shot,
clams with condoms.
You've seen it.
But I have to tell you, it's funny because I'm thinking when I say soft shell clams, I'm thinking like that because I think of soft shell crabs, and
right.
When you take soft shell crabs, you basically take them and you just fry them and eat the whole thing. And I'm thinking to myself, what kind of soft shell clams? Until I realized that up here in the northern part, they're called, they have a different name.
Right.
Wait a minute. Now I just had the name
pissers?
Because they
do you call them,
huh?
Do you call them pissers?
No,
call them pissers.
And that's the kind of that's kind of the clams that people like dig up
right,
here, like
right.
Up on like the in the Boston area. I'll think of it, but they're not. But they're not called. But anyway,
razor clams. I know there's another.
Oh no, razor clams are completely different.
Yeah,
razor clams.
What you all said up there, I'm not even
steamers.
Sure.
They're referred to as steamers.
Okay, all right. Well, we
up
call
here
them
in the
soft
north.
Shells and pissers.
Yeah, they're referred to as steamers.
Name.
And that's how, like, you're going to a restaurant and you have, let me have a bucket of steamers,
right.
People kind of know, what they are and,
exactly.
You just let it, you get the thing, you have to dip it into the juice to clean it and whatever. I mean,
sure.
It's a process. Yeah, it's like, when people eating chicken wings, people
right.
eat steamers, that's
right. Well, that's
that kind
funny.
Of a thing. but it's funny because I thought that the steamers or soft shell was indigenous to like up in the areas of like Boston. I didn't realize that they were down there.
We get them locally. They come right to our docks and bring them right up to us. So
that's great. Yeah, people need them.
Yeah, and that's a short season too. So we try to make sure we always have what's available and keep to that season, as I said. So. Yeah, it's really important.
Do you make any kind of special sauce or anything for the dipping, or you just?
No, we just use we give them the clam juice to give them a good rinse and get rid of the sand, and then we use the clarified butter, melted butter, so they can dip them. They like to dunk them first on our Old Bay seasoning, which is obviously very big here in Maryland, and. So some people like to dunk them in that as well, a little butter and Old Bay. But
where does the Old Bay seasoning origin? Was that a Maryland thing?
Well,
the Old Bay seasoning?
Good question. I think we've definitely called it our own, but I don't know the history behind that.
That's something I guess I'll have to kind of look up because I was. Okay. Let's see. Let's try this. Old Bay. Because I don't know why I think, I know it's not like New Orleans thing.
Right.
It's not that. But I'm just kind of wondering whether Old Bay seasoning.
You're typing at the same time I'm typing it in, so let you know.
Okay. Old Bay seasoning. Let's see.
Here's the story. 70 years ago, Baltimoreans first sampled Old Bay.
Oh, it is a Baltimore. Okay. It is a Maryland thing then.
That's my name, yeah.
Yeah, okay. A Chesapeake Bay Area favorite.
Yes, for sure. People put it on their French fries.
Yeah.
They put it on their, they have it on popcorn. They have it. You name it. If you can sprinkle it on something, people will add it. That makes a crab dip that they're going to take to, a cocktail party, they'll add an Old Bay seasoning.
Why I'm thinking of New Orleans thing? Because when you cook, now let me think of it, they're not, they're like one of those things that's kind of a cross between a shrimp and a lobster.
Oh, crawfish.
Crawfish, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it's always cooked in the Old Bay seasoning.
Yeah, maybe they do use something similar, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was from there. But, I'm just looking what the ingredients in Old Bay seasoning. But some thing to try to put together yourself, I'll tell you.
No, exactly. And there are some knockoff versions that just... they can get too salty or, they just don't have the right combination. So, some people try to use the knockoffs and it's just not the same.
would you ever try to do your own? No, huh?
No, I know. No, they're doing it right. Why would we try to, reinvent the wheel? Exactly.
Now I want to get into... might as well talk about what I ate there.
Sure. Yeah.
All right, wait a minute. I think I was there for...
I know. I remember you started with a little salad, and I think you had oyster Benedict. And
here we are. I got to find. I kept the menu, too. Look at that.
Oh.
All right, let's find a piece of paper on my desk.
I know you were in love with
it. Brunch menu.
You were in love.
Look at that. Brunch at Latitude. That's
there
what
you
went.
Go.
Okay. Did I have the Benedict? Oh, yeah,
no,
that's what I had.
Benedict,
I had
the fried oyster Benedict.
Benedict.
You started with a salad that you had.
Yes. That
you
was
were
the
in
first
love
thing.
With that salad dressing. I do remember that.
Oh, yeah, the salad dressing I had, was it the... just your regular one, or did I have...
No, I think it was
Tuscan?
I
didn't have the Tuscan.
It was a special. It must have been a, was it a balsamic something?
Yeah, it was a balsamic dressing.
Oh, no, no, no. I know what it was.
Basil dressing.
It was a basil vinaigrette. That was a special that week because it was the spinach, and I remember shrimp, and it was just the local
vegetables. So this one, I'm looking at it, says Tuscan spinach salad.
That's right. Yes, it was the basil
grilled
vinaigrette.
Shrimp, grilled vegetables, shaved parmesan, grilled naan bread, and a basil vinaigrette.
That's right. I remember now. Yeah,
that was it. Excuse me while
we change our menu.
Excuse me while I got to wipe the drool from my side of my face. Hang on a second. Okay, I did. All right. That's what I had. I forgot
the fried oyster Benedict.
I think Lori and I shared that, right?
You shared the salad, and then you had the fried oyster Benedict, and she enjoyed the fried oyster salad, which was, mixed greens, and then we topped it with the fried oysters and just a little bit of blue cheese crumbles, as I recall, and I think you were both pretty happy.
I think so, too. I think so. I have a feeling it was. I remember, like the, because when you asked if we wanted dessert, and I know it was one of the days it was going to be, we're leaving here and going to be eating for the rest of the day, let's not have dessert. Oh, I know why I didn't have dessert. I had dessert in the beginning.
You started with that coffee cake, and that spoiled it. we start everybody off with our cinnamon coffee cake, and people look forward to that. That's like their Sunday tradition. Come down for brunch and get their coffee cake, and some guests bring their newspaper and stay for a while and read and, kind of just get settled in, especially in the winter months because we have both the fireplaces going, and they don't want to leave, which is great. We love it. We love it.
Because I only stopped in for brunch. Like, tell me about some of the other things that you have on the menu.
We change the menu every 2 weeks because we are, so important to our locals. They come in, some of them, 3, 4, 5 nights a week. So we don't want to bore them with a seasonal menu or whatever. We change it every 2 weeks. We always have some sort of great steak. We do a lamb, either a lamb chop or a leg of lamb. We do lots of seafood, fresh fish, anything that's, obviously in season, local, we try to provide. But all of our meats are cut in house. All of our fish is clean and cut in house, so it's fresh to the table. Because the menu is so small, we're able to cook everything perfectly to order, and just each guest is just treated like, this meal is for them and them alone. We just take great measures to make sure that it's fresh and beautiful. So, it's a joy to be able to have that creativity, too, with our chefs, coming up with these new menus every 2 weeks. And then when we find something that's so popular, we'll bring it back, but not right away. We like to, keep them hanging on. And for instance, the scallops have been so popular recently. Just do a really nice pan-seared scallop and with different sides with each menu. But he did bring them back 2 menus in a row because people were going, crazy over his seared scallops.
Let me ask you a question about scallops. Yes. When you get them, they're out of the shell, right?
Yes, they're already out of the shell. Yes.
I ask you that because I have never seen scallops, fresh from, taking them from the shell. And I was watching.
Only in the islands. Only in the islands have I seen that. Yeah.
Well, this was on, they did it on Hell's Kitchen. And they had to take this. They had to take the scallops. And when they opened it up, it's like, I didn't realize how much stuff was inside that scallop shell. I'm thinking all you're going to find is that just that scallop.
Yeah.
And they get the roe and this and all kinds of stuff like that.
It seems like a lot of work, right?
Yeah. It's not like when you shuck an oyster and that's all you eat is the oyster.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I'll bet I understand. I'm getting something about, are you getting things called ramps?
Ramps.
It seems to be, it's another thing that a short-term vegetable, there's supposed to be a cross between, I guess, an onion and a scallion or something.
Huh.
They look more
know.
Like,
perhaps
kind
my
of
chef
like,
knows.
Oh, okay. Huh. Your chef will probably know, because I think that's something
sure.
that just like came with that, and I think English peas.
Oh, sure. English peas
okay.
are great.
I got to go.
Ramps.
It's interesting because when I saw them on TV, it's like, oh, yeah, I've seen them before. But it's kind of like a... Yeah, it's kind of, I guess I would say it's a cross between like a scallion and a, it's, they say it's more oniony. So
wow.
I guess it's a wilder you know, taste to them. Not that I'm going to go out there and buy and use it.
No.
That's not
no.
my thing. But,
exactly.
but there was thing about, I'm want to find out in terms of English peas to see like, you know, is it like the same thing coming out of the pods or not? That I'll check out. Maybe I don't know.
Well, you know, we definitely have odd things, and people go, "What? Never heard of this before? Never seen this before?" I mean, we, you know, when our Ravens won the Super Bowl, hello, we had purple potatoes on the menu. We had to have purple, you know, anything that was purple was being introduced to that menu because we were so proud of our Ravens here. So, you know, we like to play around with new and different things and you know, it's fun for the customers to try them. We, you know, have a little time to educate them and you know, it's just, like I said, changing that menu every 2 weeks gives us that kind of excitement every 2 weeks. Our chef and his staff in the kitchen, they don't get bored, our customers don't get bored, and you know, it just keeps it interesting. So, and I don't know if I mentioned while you were there that all the entrees we serve in full and half portions, because we have found through the years that our, you know, our guests like to have that option. You know, maybe they don't care for a full meal, it's too much, they want to have a smaller plate, and that's how we presented the menu, that each entree is served. And when I say full portion, so your main entree for crab cakes would have 2 4-ounce crab cakes, and then your half entree would have a single crab cake. So a smaller plate during the dinner hour is nice.
What, would you say that your crab cakes are different from everybody else's, or is there something, what's the specialty? Is there some specialty about the crab cakes that you do? Anything?
Yes, I like to say that our crab cakes are, you know, wonderful flavor. We do use a little bit of Dijon in our recipe, which may be different. A lot of people use dry mustard. We use Dijon. And we use a very light breading, a Japanese breadcrumb, very light, just to bind the meat, because we do use lump crab meat. But for the most part, I think if you talk to people that come to visit Maryland, I think a lot of places use very shredded crab meat, and then they're frying the crab cake, and that's just not us. We broil our crab cakes, and you can visually see the lumps of the crab meat. So
right.
That's what, you know, makes ours stand out, I think.
Oh, that's.
Yeah.
That's good to hear. And then I'm curious, do you think because it's local, because you're getting the crab meat there and, you know, and it's Maryland and whatever, mm-hmm. you think you get if I'm going to the store, the grocery store, would I be able to get a better deal because it's local? as opposed to because I'm in New York and I go to the grocery store and,
Sure, you're going to pay more for Maryland meat outside of Maryland just for the fact that it's been transported to you. Our purveyors, are bringing it right to our door, from the picking house to the door, and there's no middleman, which is nice, Obviously,
right.
There are different stages in getting it to the grocery store than there is to getting it to our restaurant.
So you don't have to really hike up the price as much.
Exactly.
That's good to know. I also, you have a big bar, a nice-sized bar and wine there?
Yes, our bar is very popular, and the boating season has started, so we have so many guests that come back year after year, and they're remembered by our bartenders. They know them by name. They'd like to call us the Cheers of Oxford because, we do remember people when they come back year after year, and we take good care of them, and we go out of our way to get them there as well, since we're sort of on the just at the outskirt of town. We go into all the marinas and pick them up. So if they're coming by boat, we have transportation to and from all the marinas, complimentary. So, they love that. The boaters are just blown away that we'll go out of our way to pick them up. But people say when their first visit, they have teased me. They say, "Well, if you're coming to get me, I've got to see what this is about." They just, they feel so special right from the get-go,
Now, what's different with the other restaurant that you have? Is that there already?
It's at the masthead at Pier Street. It's right on the water. Views are spectacular. The sunsets that will just blow your socks off. People say, "Oh, Key West has the most beautiful sunsets." Well, I disagree. I think it's right here in Oxford, and it's a big open deck restaurant on the water. We seat 350 people, and that's our crab house. That's where you can sit down and pick the hard crabs at the table. The picnic tables are out on the water, and we do have an interior dining room too that seats about 85. But it's that's more of a seafood house. It's casual, come in shorts and just kick back and have some drinks, watch the sunset, and we have, island music playing, and it's definitely got that kind of Key Westy feel, I think. It's definitely a family-friendly and pet-friendly, by the way, because a lot of places you can't take your pets to. So our county actually allows for small... I say small, but and well-behaved dogs to enter into the outdoor dining deck.
I notice when a place is that use the word pet-friendly, it really means dog-friendly. I have never seen people walking their cats yet.
You don't see that. This is true.
Yeah. or their parrots on their shoulders,
Seems
to be about dogs.
but I have in the past have to ask, some guests to either take their dog back to their boat or back to their home if they've been acting up because we did have one dog one afternoon barking at the waitress each time she would go to the table to bring them anything to eat or drink. And I thought, this is not good for the rest of our customers. So finally had to say, maybe it's best we pack your order up and you take it carry out. And it wasn't a friendly bark. It was more like stay away from my owner. And I thought this doesn't feel right.
Good at all. So if I'm just like somebody coming to Oxford, what places offhand would you recommend that people make sure they see, not necessarily the restaurant,
of course. I would say when you're coming into our beautiful town, there are so many great inns to stay in. So if you're going to stay for a weekend, we've got some beautiful bed and breakfast. One is just outside of the town limits, Coombsbury, and they have like a private cottage, and that is a pet-friendly place. I know people are so concerned with being able to bring their pets on vacation, and that's a great spot to do that, and nice lawns to take the animals out. And then we have several inns and B&Bs in town, the Oxford Inn and Sandaway and the Robert Morrison. And there's some shops in town. We have some cute little places to step in and spend a little money if you like. And then the museum if you're here about history. And then the summer we have walking tours, historic walking tours. We also have our picket fences on display.
We heard all about that.
Oh, my gosh, it's so much fun. And
Robert Morrison, is that where I had to have tea? They serve afternoon tea?
Yes, yes. But the picket fences, getting back to that, it just gets the visitors moving around town, because sometimes when you go to a town, you maybe travel the main street and you see what's the commerce, right? You see the shops and that's it. Okay,
right.
The picket fences are here and there, and they're distributed around town, so it takes you out of like our main street and down to these little side streets where maybe there's a marina that you didn't even know existed, but it's so lovely. And so the map provides you with all the locations of the fences and just moves you about town. And it's sort of like going on a little, search. So you take this map and you go out and you can do it by bike, you can do it by car. Some people have walked it. It's a lot of walking, but maybe you break it down. Like we have some families that say, well, we're going to do half of it today and half of it tomorrow. But it moves people about town and gives them a real good feeling of what Oxford is about, not just the main street,
Yeah.
As we've been doing this now. This is our fifth year, I think.
Cool.
Coming up. So, and it's a great event. At the end of the season, they're all auctioned off. Columbus Day weekend, I believe. Anyway, it's a great event. And then the artists each select their own charity. And so a portion of the proceeds goes to the charity of the winning fence, like the highest bid fence. Half the proceeds go to that charity. So it's just a great event. We love putting it together each year and love seeing what the artists do with these fences. In fact, the winning fence then goes on the Christmas ornament for the following year, and we sell the Christmas ornaments locally out of all the businesses. So you have an Oxford picket fence memory. Yeah.
It'd be a great time to do a scavenger hunt, too.
For sure. Yeah. Well, we've done some crazy things like that in the past in Oxford, too.
That's great. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I don't know that I'll be passing through that. One of my next trips is through to Dorchester County.
Oh, well, you'll be right down the road from it then.
Yeah, so we'll be
10 minutes away.
Huh?
You got to stop off and say hello.
I have to stop off and say hello to all the people, the people I've met.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah,
of course.
You'll be right down the road.
Yeah, just down the road a piece.
Well, down the road a piece, and it's lovely. Cambridge is really up and coming, so, there's a lot to see there. I know you'll have a great time.
So Cambridge is like to Dorchester County as Easton is to Talbot County?
I would say so, yes. And you know what? Oh, I have a friend that owns a great restaurant there. You have to add it to your list, even if it's not on your list already, the High Spot. On High Street, great, great food. You would love it.
Well, I'll write that. Let me put that down here. The High Spot.
High Spot, and good friends of mine, and it's fairly new, a couple years old, and they do a great job. See, I do get out, even though I own two restaurants. I still get out to eat.
That's good. Well, when the trip, my press trip, gets set up. I can put that out there.
Definitely.
What type of food is that?
They're a little bit like Latitude 38, very creative meals, smaller menu. I'm trying to think of what. Oh, he does a what's the oyster? Buffalo oysters, he calls them. So they're kind of a spicy oyster, but then it's over mixed greens with like a little bit of blue cheese, and I don't know. It's like the spice and then the cream of the blue cheese, and I can't remember the dressing, but that was one of our favorites. And then they do like fish tacos, and they do, as I recall, they do like a some type of pork. It was like a pulled pork, but anyway, just everything's just very creative. And again, a smaller menu, so they're able to be creative and do some different things and change it more often as well. And they've got beers on tap. They do just fun local beers and. I don't know. They're just neat people, and I love the feeling of the restaurant. It's this, it's an older building downtown Cambridge, and I shouldn't be selling my other competition so well.
But it is a neat
I'm
going to
be
going
there,
so you
know. If you're going to be there, you have to see it. That's what I said about.
Yeah. Okay. I won't ask any more about anybody else, any other places that you know that I should go to.
Right. That's funny.
That's great. Yeah, well, as I'm coming through, I guess there's not much of a choice, right? I mean,
exactly.
If I'm going to Dorchester County,
right.
I have to go like the same way and then go, into Easton and then go across again, right?
Right. So you'll have like a little 10-minute detour to come down Oxford Road to say hello, and that's all it will take. But it's worth the stop.
Oh, of course. Wait a minute. Am I dealing with any ferry?
No. To go to Cambridge, you'll just... Oh, to come to Oxford, no ferry. You come Route 50, you take the bypass in Easton, and it's Oxford Road. It's a real quick road.
Oh, okay.
The ferry will take you from Oxford over to St. Michael's. You wouldn't need to do that.
Oh,
just
okay.
Come visit Oxford, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's a quick trip across to St. Michael's if you're in Oxford rather than driving back to Easton and all the way around. It's, and it saves you about, 20 minutes on your trip. So, and the ferry is up and running. So we're happy about that because it does get people moving about from St. Michael's to Oxford because they'd like to save that time. Yeah.
Glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Merle. Well,
yes.
Listen, I'm glad I had a chance to talk to you again, and I'm off to work right now. Actually, I'm out the door in 2 minutes. So.
Okay, you got it.
Yeah, I'm really happy that we had a chance to talk, and please stop in and see us on your way through to Dorchester County.
Okay, you got it. All right,
take care.
Have a great evening.
Yeah, you too. Take good care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes. Well, now I'm getting hungry again. Oh, yes. The little drool is coming down. Well, I had what I've been eating today. Well, I had sushi today. So that's good. Okay. So, well, let's see. So what I'm going to do is... okay, I'm going to load up some more songs for the next show. I want to get some newer Jim Brickmans, and I also just got a whole bunch of bluegrass music, including the Graskills. So I'm going to load some of that up, and that's when when I do the next show. We'll get to hear music from that. Let me see what's coming up. Let's see what's coming up here. I have, it's funny. I got a very, got a busy weekend. Looks like I'm going to see, with a bunch of friends, I'm going to go see musical, going to some kind of a brunch. That represents a whole group of restaurants in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. That's what I'll be doing. So, and then next week I'm going to see a play. I'm going to see I keep thinking the road. It's not the road to the trip to Bountiful. That's what I'm going to see, and I'll talk about that soon. So what I'm going to do is I'm ending the show because I'm a little talked out, and one of my cats is here screaming at me for the second meal of the day. You hear him? Well, I don't know. I don't know if you can hear my cat, but yes, I got I have four rubber chickens and two cats. That's what I have here. So, okay, so till next time, everybody, have a great day, evening, afternoon, or midnight, or wherever it is. Just as long as...